There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, I'm Derek Draper.
And I'm Eloa, and on this episode of Derek Draper's Space, we're going to be talking about Chapter 8 of Create Space, which is Space to Deliver. The story in this chapter is about Tamsin and her missing delivery, and it's not lost in the post. And the lesson of this chapter is this. Yeah. Only by ruthlessly focusing and prioritising will you be able to create the space to think about and deliver what really matters. I love that, ruthlessly focusing and prioritising. Mm-hmm. There's loads to talk about in this chapter, but first, can you tell us the story of Tamsin?
Yeah. I mean, so just to put it in context, this is the second chapter in the part of the book on creating space to do. And it picks up very much from the first chapter and episode that we've done, which was about planning, right, and goals. But in a way, that was about like the Uber plan, like your big goal and how you're going to get there. This chapter is more about kind of delivering on a day-to-day level as well, right? So how do you manage your time? How do you actually manage your tasks, right? And Tamsin was someone who sort of couldn't do that, right? And from the first moment that we met, when I think she was on the phone whilst talking to her assistant who was running after her with a big pile of stuff dropping out. I mean, it was like something out of a sitcom, right? Sort of waving to me, you know, because she was so important, you know, she couldn't stop. And then sitting down and trying to sort of, you know, respond to text messages during our first coaching session. And I'd been brought in because she had managed to, I mean, it was very interesting. She came from a very poor background. And again, without going into the details of the story, she kind of learned growing up that she had to do everything, right? Or the whole thing would collapse. And she'd take, this is the absolute great example of a core pathogenic belief, right? She grew up thinking, I've got to do everything or everything will collapse. And now she was a relatively successful managing director of her own business, and she still had that mentality. And that explained why she was doing it. Now, the problem was it was kind of true when she was a teenager, right, because of the home she came from. It wasn't true now, right? And in fact, of course, it's the opposite was true, which is she couldn't do everything, right? And it wasn't going to collapse, right? Ironically, by doing what she was doing, she was being about the conditions where, so she'd taken investment from a private equity firm, and they of course had come in and seen her work and thought, you know, this isn't working, right? You know, she needs to kind of totally change how she's delivering. And it was all about focusing and prioritizing. Right, which you couldn't do. So she thought she had to do everything. And if you asked her to do something, she would say, oh, yes, sure, and then not do it, you know. So she was trying to please people, and actually she was just sort of annoying everybody, you know. So it was a very crucial thing for her, right, because, you know, they were going to get her out, right, unless she changed. And I won't tell you what happened because spoil the story. But it was a really interesting case.
It feels to me like one of the clearest examples in the book of the impact that one of these core pathogenic beliefs can have on your behaviour and then on your work and on your career.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it really was quite a risky, precarious
That's
situation
right.
that she was in.
That's right.
And one of the things that fed into that was what you call the world's worst feedback.
Yeah. Well, and that's the point, right? So, you know, on a deeper level, what happened was that she had learnt growing up that her value was being the person that did everything for everybody, right? That is how she got her value, initially at home and then in a care home, and, you know. And so it was very clear to see where it had come from, right? But it was leading to, as I say, a really serious situation. So I put it in the book because it's the world's worst fear. And I do emphasise that everyone is disguised. There was no such person as Tamsin. But I did work with someone in a very different industry who was, you know, who had the same psychology. I think it was even a man, right? But, you know, in the story, keeping with the story of Tamsin, this is what people, but this is the actual feedback from the real thing that happened, right? It's not made up, right? Now, don't forget, this is a people pleaser. She wants to, she's not a horrible person, right? She wants to help. She wants to be nice, right? She doesn't want to let anyone down.
She wants to deliver.
She wants to deliver. This is what everyone said about her. She doesn't listen. She's all talk. I've basically caught her out in barefaced lies. You can't trust her. I now just avoid her and let her live in her fantasy world. She never does what she says she will do. You can't rely on her to deliver. And then in the book, it says, as I related all this, her expression was blank. Then she slowly turned red and began to sob. Mm-hmm. I know, I know, I know, she sniffed. They're right. Right? So she also knew it. Living in a fantasy, right, world. So yeah, it you know, really important for her to make some change.
So the fundamental lesson for Tamsin was that she had to learn how to execute, how to actually get the job done. To what extent do you think that is a learnable skill?
There's a brilliant book by Ram Charan and I think Larry Bossidy, which is called Execution: The Discipline of Getting Things Done. Right, because that's what it's about. It's doing things, getting them over the line, right? Doing that, then moving on to the next thing. Not having like 20 things you're doing that never get done, that is not executing, right? I'm very busy. I've got all of these priorities and plans. Do any of them get done? No. Well, you might as well stay at home, right? So don't look busy, right? Because you're not achieving it. Business isn't about the input, it's about the output, right? Productivity is about actually doing things. But they're right to have named that book in the way they do, which is the discipline, right, of getting things done. And it has two meanings, that is, yes, it takes a lot of discipline to get things done, but it's also a discipline, something you can learn, right? And funny enough, out of all of the 12 chapters of the book, I think you can improve on all of them, right, with reflection and support, reading stuff. But execution is the one where I think it's most developable, right? It's most to do with, well, what have you done? Right, what have you achieved? And it's actually why that's what CVs are, right? CVs now, rather than just I was at this job and that job, they're always like, at this job I achieved X, Y, and Z, right? Everyone hated me, I hated the job, doesn't get in, right? I achieved X, Y, and Z, right? So that sense of getting things done, and I think you can get better at it, but you know. And the book is full of tips. We might go on to them in a minute, right, about how you can do that, how you can execute better and quicker, right? But you also have to deal with the kind of psychological barriers to why you're not doing that, right? And that was the issue with Tamsin, right? She had this psychological barrier that we had to try and work on first, because no number of tools or tips or models would have helped her, right?
Did she share any worries that you see other CEOs or other senior leaders having?
Well, very regularly, the survey of the annual surveys of CEOs, when they say, what are you worried about, right? It's about this, right? It's about achieving them, delivering what they're supposed to deliver, right? Which we go on to in another episode around leadership, when you actually step up another level in terms of delivery, right? But also, you know, other people delivering for them, right? Because a proper leader is delegating huge tasks, right? And so you've got to think, well, you know, we're dependent on, I worked for Spirits Company for a long time, we're dependent on that launch of that new whiskey, right, in that region. Is Sally going to be able to pull it off or not, right? So that's you know, the meat and drink of a CEO's life, of any business's life, is, are they going to be able to deliver?
So as you said, this is an area where you can strategically, practically, there are loads of tips, there are loads of tools, there are things that people can do. Can you take us through some of the tips that are in the book and any that come to mind?
Yep. So more in the chapter on planning, but you've got to have your goal, right? Because if you don't know what you're supposed to deliver, this is common sense, right? But believe me, I have met with, companies, really big companies, really senior people. And if you say, well, what are you supposed to be delivering? They don't know, right? So which is sort of insane, right? So you have to know what am I supposed to be delivering? What are we supposed to be delivering? I think then my other big tip would be to avoid multitasking, right? So multitasking is a terrible interference with the idea of getting things done. Now, when we were, and the book starts with a story about me standing on a mountain looking at the Serengeti Valley and talking about ancient men and women who lived in a very different way and had limitless space, right? So they didn't have these, I don't know if they even had names, right? But Bo, the guy in the village, right? Didn't have a massive to-do list, right? Go and kill a gazelle, right? Grab some leaves, come back home, right? It wasn't, sort of 18, integrated Google apps. But the interesting thing is that what those ancient men and women had that we still have, because our brains haven't changed at all in the last 200,000 years, right? It took millions of years for the human brain to evolve, right? So we are the same people that lived in those circumstances. And what God or nature or a combination of the two, whatever you believe, did was put inside the human brain a mechanism that liked new things, right? Noticed new things, got pleasure from
novelty,
right? Mm. Brilliant word. Now, if you're standing on the top of a hill and you're looking out as the watchman for your village, you need to have that. That's why it developed, right? And it's a hit of dopamine, basically, right? So what happens is, and I say it in the book, right? Ping, the movement in the grass. Is it a lion? Oh, no, it's not, right? Ping, something just noise over there. Could it be the warrior tribe coming to raid us? Oh no, it's a hippo, right? So a whole series of things that meant that every time we notice this new thing, we get a little hit of dopamine, right?
I can see where you're going with this.
Yeah. Mm. So today, right, we are bombarded with things that give us that, right? Social media being the absolute classic example, right? Somebody liked my Facebook thing. I've got a text, right? But not just social media, right? Someone in the office coming over and saying, oh, that project's been passed, or, oh, did you hear about Joe, right? All sorts of things that are basically, I want to hear about that.
There's so many websites that are built to capitalise on that function of the brain. So you'll be reading the article and things will literally pop up out you.
Right.
The sidebar.
That's right.
You scroll down, something happens. There's an advert that pops up in the middle.
That's right.
And it's all about having that dopamine hit get generated. So you're like, oh, shiny thing.
That's right.
But as you were saying, when the brain evolved, the new things were the exception, not the
That's
norm.
Right.
And now they're the norm, not
That's
the
right.
exception.
That's right.
And so we have to be disciplined.
So if you find yourself getting distracted all the time, right, even for things that seem to matter, right, because actually, what the book argues is you don't respond to those emails or messages, right? You don't even look at them until you're ready to, because the book is about you controlling your space, not having it control for you, right? And even if, Sally comes over and says, have you heard about the new project? You say, I'll come over and chat with you in an hour, just got to get this done, right? But even that's an interruption, right? And the interesting science on this is that it takes 3 or 4 times the amount of time to recover from an interruption than the interruption itself, right? So you're sitting at your desk, you're writing a report, say, or putting together some proposal or whatever it is, the problem you're solving, and it's going to take an hour, and then someone comes over and says, oh, have you heard about the new project? You don't want to be rude, right? And you are interested, right? You go, oh, no, what is it? And they talk to you for 2 minutes, and then you go back to your work. You've lost 10 minutes, right? So you're going home later. Now, by the way, that kind of interruption in a modern office does not happen once a day, right? So one of the reasons why people aren't getting anything done or feel like they aren't is because of all those interruptions. So managing that, and the book is all sort of practical instances of how you can kind of make sure that you're in control of your time, not other people, is a really important thing that you have to master in order to get things done.
I want to say two things. One of them is, and well, three, because I want to bring us back to the tips as well. Mm. So I'll just mention those again. One of them is that you said people might be feeling like they don't get stuff done, but there are studies coming out now showing that people really aren't getting that much work done.
Right.
So alongside that study that you referenced, which I think was conducted by Microsoft about the amount of time it takes to recover from distractions, there's new, which I think I mentioned in a previous episode or certainly in the chat that we had. Yeah. That people are only getting a couple of hours of focused, proper work done in an office in an average working day, because of all this distraction and everything that's kind of going on, and the lack of discipline, the lack of kind of deliberate intentional focus.
Yeah.
I know for myself, I've worked in a productivity training company, and so I learned a way of working there that we certainly echo here. That was like, don't think about checking your emails, process your emails. So when you go into your inbox, you're in there for the purpose, not just of reading this new information getting that dopamine hit, but you're going in. If you read an email, you're either going to respond to it if it takes less than 2 minutes.
Yeah.
You're going to file it away if you have to go and take some proper action on it. Yeah. You're going to put it in a file to read later if you can't read it now, if it's more informational. You're going to do something with that email.
Yeah.
And I still have to fight the urge just to check my email, just to read my, and I still do. Well, it really does take discipline.
I mean, I worked with the chief executive of an advertising agency, and she never replied to emails that were sent to her, ever, right? She would wait for people to text her.
Right? Because then she would know it's really important.
And she said hardly anyone did. Mm. And when I say she didn't check them, she literally never looked at them.
Mm.
So she would have hundreds of emails, thousands. Wow. In her inbox that she'd never looked at, right? And soon people kind of stopped sending them, and they would approach her for the really crucial things face-to-face in the office or by text.
Mm. I think that's one approach. Might not be 10.
Yeah, I'm not recommending it. I'm just saying, you know, that's how extreme you can be.
But it comes back to this idea of multitasking, and I like the word that's kind of in the ether at the moment around monotasking, and there's lots of kind of synonyms for it.
People talk about
hyper-focusing
or
going dark.
Yeah.
You know, put the headphones on have a power hour.
Yes.
All that sort of thing. It's the idea of
I used to track, so I'm very lucky now that I have my own office, right? But when I worked at my previous consultancy, YSC, I tried that, right? So I put I bought them on purpose. They were big Sony headphones that, you know, completely covered your ears like that. And there was one more mature guy in the office, shall we say, who used to come over and knock on them.
Oh.
Thank you, Charles. You know, honestly.
Yeah.
Time it. And I said, please don't do it.
You were trying to communicate something.
I was trying to say, don't disturb me. He would knock on me and go, hello, are you in tomorrow? It's like, piss off about tomorrow. I'm still dealing with today. Anyway.
Let's have a think about some of the other tips or advice, practical things people can do.
Well, so first of all, you've got to manage your meetings properly, right? And in the book, there's loads of examples. Marissa Meyer at Yahoo used to have 70 meetings a week, which sounds horrendous, but they're 10 minutes long each, right? Sometimes five.
Mm.
I've known other CEOs do regular 5-minute meetings, right? Not all day or scattered throughout the day, by the way, because then you're kind of doing the multitasking in a way, right? You're kind of like, you know, macheting up your day. They would say, right, okay, so on Tuesday between 2 and 4, I will do 15 meetings, right? And they'd be one after the other. People would come in, they were queuing, right? It's a little bit, by the way, like what used to happen when people went to petition the king in medieval England, right? But they would have to stay outside the court for like days because the king would go hunting or go off with his mistress instead, right? So, you know, but that idea that the people are there, but they didn't mind that because they were getting the 3 or 4 minutes and felt that they had connected, right? To go back to, you know, one of the other parts of the book about connecting, they connected with the CEO. They managed to say, look, I don't want to bother you, but I've got this one issue, right? Or can I get your advice on this? He knew more about what was going on than somebody who had read 10,000 emails after those 2 hours of talking to people.
And I think it's this idea of the kind of relationship again. if I know that I've got 5 minutes with my CEO, I'm going in focused.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm going to be disciplined. I'm going to do the work beforehand to actually get really clear on what I need that time with him for or her.
Yeah, and people, you know, tend to have meetings for half an hour. People basically have one meeting length, which is either half an hour or an hour, for everything. Which is crazy, right? You know, if you're talking about the launch of the new product and you've got like five things that you have to kind of puzzle through and you want to have a collaboration around it, maybe you need an hour, maybe you need it half a day, right? If you're checking in with someone on something or you've got an issue, right, why would it take on the fact you can actually do quite a lot in 5 minutes, right? You know, but people are just used to them padding that out, you know, making small talk. Well, it's good to have those social occasions as well. But why mingle the two? So that's what I mean about managing. You know, you have to, you know, ride it like a tiger, right, all this.
And Derek, what about tech? Because obviously we've all got phones, tablets, you know, Slack accounts, CRM software. We're all using all these different kinds of software, like you said about the Google Suite.
Well, I when the book came out, I went on Breakfast Telly, right? And one of the presenters, when I was saying, look, you know, she asked about tech, and I said, well, you just switch it off, right? You just put the phone face down, no notifications, right? And she said, oh, I'm getting nervous already at that idea, right? Now, the example I gave to her was, you know, the weekend, right? You're not really checking your phone 100 or 1,000 times a weekend, right? Because your mum who's a bit ill might have had a fall, right? Or so one of your kids needs you. That's not the reason, right? Now, if there are things like that in your life, you can get a £10 phone, right, very easily on pay as you go, and you can have that on all the time, right? But it doesn't have Facebook, it doesn't have Twitter, right, or LinkedIn, or work emails. You know, so, you know, I think people have to be ultra disciplined around tech, or they're literally taking a day that they should have directed and they should have planned and managed and cutting it into 1,000 pieces, right?
I turn my notifications off at the weekend, and most of my apps, I don't actually have notifications. So I have to physically go into the app to see if somebody's commented on something on Facebook. So rather than getting that alert popping up on my home screen, I know myself, I know that I don't have the discipline to resist the urge to go in and see, what did, you know, Alison so-and-so say about my post? So I kind of just put that extra level of discipline in.
Great.
You've got this idea of losing a third as well, which I think is important to mention.
Well, yeah, so this is, I think I have it in the book actually, about the pendulum of kind of where you have to go quite radical and challenge people before the pendulum, you know, so they're there and then the pendulum swings the other way because of your challenge, and then they settle somewhere in the middle, right? So I'm very conscious that hardly anyone can do that. This isn't really a practical thing to do, right? But when I'm talking to someone who has this issue of, I'm too busy, I'm overworking, my family are getting crazy about me, I'm getting ill, right? Whatever it might, my boss is thinking I'm letting him down, whatever this menage of nonsense around overworking might be. And I'd say, well, number one, we're talking about prioritizing, right, and focusing. You need to get rid of a third of what you're doing, right? You know, and there's no way out of that, right? You have to sit down and somehow get rid of a third of what you're doing, right? Because not only do you need to get rid of the kind of 10% that, or even 20% that's pure overwork, right? You shouldn't be in the office at 7 or 8 o'clock at night, right? And you shouldn't have to work regularly. There are lots of jobs where you might have to work on a Saturday or Sunday sometimes, but not every week, right? So you need to get rid of that completely, right? That's just almost like, you know, you should stop smoking, right? It's almost a health thing, right? But also, if you're going to do what this book's all about, which is take control of your life, take control of your space, then you're going to, and plan stuff, right? You're going to reorientate around certain priorities, right? You're going to bring things into focus. You're going to have clarity about what you're trying to achieve. And that takes time and effort and space, right? So you also need to get rid of things to make room for that, right? Now, it is very, very hard to do, which is why hardly anyone does it. You know, it's why I sort of sat down and spent 2 years writing a book about it. But my challenge to people is, what have you tried?
Thank you, Derek. Loads of good stuff. I think this is one of the meatiest chapters in the book. So I hope you enjoyed that. I hope you're taking something tangible, something practical away with you from this episode. Do join us again for a future episode of Derek Draper's Space and head over to derekdrapers.space for more.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.